Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company. Serving collectors since 1945.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Edge of Sports, the podcast brought to you by The Nation magazine. This week, I'm so excited to play this interview for you. We speak to Rebecca O'Keefe. And Rebecca O'Keefe helped spark an international firestorm within the world of sports when she called on the Irish women's basketball team to boycott its February 8th match against Israel. Now, I don't want to say too much about it because I introduce her and explain the whole background, but this is a story that made waves around the world. We're living in a time, of course, where Palestinian lives have been dehumanized to such a profound degree by Israel and the United States that voices like Rebecca O'Keefe's are so important. So please listen, check it out. Rebecca O'Keefe, Edge of Sports Podcast, brought to you by The Nation magazine.
A champion is bred from hard times, scarred mind standing on the ledge. The squad grind all time, victory in spite of opposition. Welcome to competition. You pick a side, I pick a side, they pick a side. Take a knee against abuse, they'd rather you die. Pushing through dark tunnels, trying to shed light. The fight is on the moment we enter the game of life. Get it right before the whole thing gone dead. Let's go ahead and take it there. Meet me on the edge.
Welcome to Edge of Sports, the TV show brought to you by The Real News Network. I'm Dave Zirin. This week we are speaking with someone at the heart of a massive international sports story. Her name is Rebecca O'Keefe, and the world's sporting powers lost it when she started the call for the Irish basketball women's team to boycott their February 8th game against Israel in protest of the continued onslaught in Gaza. Then the Israeli team called them anti-Semitic for even raising the boycott call, and the Irish players who did not boycott were so insulted they refused to shake hands with their Israeli opponents, which caused more outrage in Israel than the mass killings in Gaza themselves. It's a lot to unpack, but fortunately, she is here to explain it. She's a former international basketball player, currently with Irish Sport for Palestine. Let's bring her on, Rebecca O'Keefe. Rebecca O'Keefe, thank you so much for joining us here on Edge of Sports.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's start with the narrative of what happened. How did the call for the Irish women's basketball team to boycott Israel come about?
So the Irish senior women's team had a basketball match against Israel for as part of the Eurobasket qualifiers. So that was set to take place last year. And I called for that boycott back in October. So I called for FIBA, the governing body, to suspend Israel based on a precedent that they had done with Russia beforehand and Belarus. And I'd also called on Basketball Ireland to withdraw participation. So what turned out happening was the match was postponed. So that was postponed to February 2024. And when that was said that Basketball Ireland would intend to fulfill the fixture, I reissued those calls in January of 2024. So I reissued the calls to FIBA, reissued the calls to Basketball Ireland, and then I also said, okay, in the event that no action is taken by those bodies, players boycott the game as well. So I reissued those calls to no avail. There was talk of heavy sanctions, such as a ban and a fine, but I reiterated again that for the first forfeit, which this match would have been, there was no ban. It was going to be a fine of up to €80,000 maximum, which like a lot of people in civil society said they would crowdfund for. So amongst all of that, I ended up getting a lot of support from civil society, a lot of organizations such as the Irish Palestinian Solidarity Campaign and Irish Sport for Palestine, amongst others. So it really gained a lot of traction amongst the population here who supported the calls for boycott, but also mainly for these governing bodies to take action. Because I maintain through all this, like, it should never have been on the players themselves. They were put in a terrible position. So there was an email campaign, there was more calls, and then Basketball Ireland came out and said, no, we're fulfilling the fixture. But amongst all of that, five, if not six players individually took a stand to boycott the game. So, you know, massive respect to them. They were so brave, and that courage taken, that moral stand, I can't applaud that enough. So those five or six players took that moral stand, but the game was still due to go ahead. There was still silence and inaction from these governing bodies despite precedent, because while FIBA removed Russia and Belarus, Basketball Ireland themselves also protested a game against Belarus and said they would not fulfill it. So amongst all of these double standards and inconsistencies and the players themselves boycotting, the match was due to go ahead. Now, it was going to be in a neutral venue in Latvia. So the week leading up to the game, we actually saw quite an escalation in all of this. And images emerged from Israeli training camp of machine guns on the court, very specific, definite political messaging being promoted, soldiers, army personnel, who no doubt are part of this ongoing genocide. So when that was coming out in promotion of a game under FIBA, that flagrantly violates so many regulations as is. But then a player on the Israeli team called Ireland anti-Semitic, quite anti-Semitic, which is false. So there were many instances in that week that the game could have or should have been boycotted on many grounds. But so in response to being called, falsely being called anti-Semitic, the Basketball Ireland players said, we will take a stand and not partake in pre-match arrangements such as shaking hands. So they were taking a stand. They did not shake hands. They did not partake. They stood on the side of the court. The match went ahead, and then it gained international attention. So while the players made a stand, I still think they were in such a horrendous position. It should have been taken out of their hands by the governing bodies, by FIBA. However, it did make a it did take a stand, sent a message, it gained international attention, sparked conversation, and now FIBA has said that those events leading up are now under review. So will they be sanctioned? I don't know.
How do you explain it to the players, the public, that FIBA would have this double standard where they would support the banning of Belarus and Russia, yet Israel at this moment is somehow untouchable? Like, how is that explained? How is that discussed in Ireland?
People understand the double standard and the inconsistencies. And it is a clear-cut case, in our opinion, that you did it before with Russia and Belarus. You should be doing it now to Israel. Why they're not doing it, it's you know, mirrored on the political stage as well, that Israel acts with impunity and gets away with it and is above the law. So we know that there's a double standard here. We know there's an inconsistency. We know it should come from the governing body of FIBA, but failing that, it should also come from the national bodies. Because I'm going to reference FIFA now, the soccer association. They also removed Russia, but it fell to national governing bodies to refuse to play. And that mounting pressure did end up making FIBA suspend Russia. So there is clear precedent here. The inconsistencies and the hypocrisies are rife. And it also feeds into this narrative of sports and politics shouldn't mix. And I reject that statement.
We're definitely going to talk about that, believe you me. I also want to underline a point you made earlier, that Israeli players posed with machine guns on the court.
So the
players, am I getting that right?
So images emerged of soldiers in uniform, in with machine guns, with players. They had banners, we stand with Israel, release the hostages, all this political messaging. There was an image of a machine gun at the court, and then you could see the court in the background. So these were incredibly alarming images. And for that rhetoric of sports and politics don't mix, this was front and center. And it was a very definite weaponization of Israeli propaganda to promote a basketball match.
Yeah. No, shocking that that's a part of it, and shocking that that somehow doesn't fall under the matrix of sports and politics, according to the minders of FIBA. You know, you said something also that I think some of my listeners coming to this for the first time, some of the viewers might not understand. Israel, which is in the Middle East, plays in the European qualifiers for basketball. What is that about? And what comes to my mind is this idea of, you know, Israel as a European colonial state, of trying to, you know, mark that ground that Israel is somehow a Western nation in the Middle East. I mean, is that the way it's understood in Ireland as well? And do people ever take a step back and say, wow, this is political in and of itself?
Yeah, I don't think people make the connection that it's political, but everyone definitely says, why is Israel competing in European competitions across the board and even in cultural events like Eurovision and so forth? So people definitely understand that, but they don't make the connection, I don't think, between that strategic element of it. And I also don't know if people understand it, probably because a lot of Asia Cup nations won't actually play against Israel.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think the full Irish team didn't heed the boycott? What do you think were the blocks for them to not get a total boycott among the team?
Yeah, and I think it's important to say, so I am actually a basketball player myself. I love basketball. I love my community as well. I support women in sport always. I don't think players should have been in this position at all. So I did, I'm not casting judgment on players who did end up playing because it should have been taken out of their hands. However, some of them did play. And I think a lot of it had to do with, again, the sanctions that were mentioned. And some statements came out that should they not play, it would harm the sport for a generation because of this ban and the fine. And so I think it's worth explaining as well that basketball in Ireland, it's quite under-resourced and it's not as well-funded as other major sports in the country. So that is definitely a factor. And I think that the threat of this ban and fine may have made players think twice, but I do think it was overstated and the ban wasn't going to come in until a second forfeit if that was ever going to happen. And civil society, again, we did offer to help crowdfund this if the fine was imposed.
So the absence of a handshake after the game or before the game, can you speak about why the Irish players refused to shake hands? What were those discussions about and why the refusal took place? I know you mentioned it earlier, but perhaps you could fill that out a bit.
Yeah, and just to state, I am not on the team and I was not one of those players who boycotted. I'm a former international player. And so I'm not privy to internal discussions or how the dynamics played out. But the statement that was released said they are not partaking in those pre-match arrangements, such as a handshake, due to the allegations of being anti-Semitic, that an Israeli player called Ireland quite anti-Semitic. The no handshake was in response to that. So while we were calling for a boycott for solidarity with Palestinians and the ongoing genocide, and I don't think the game should have gone ahead. However, a stand was made, and that stand did reach headlines around the world.
Yes, it did. Did it strike you that this rejection of the handshake received the most publicity? Not the call for a boycott, not the incredible civil society movement against the playing, not FIBA's awful reaction, not the posing with machine guns on the court, but the rejection of the handshake. Did that strike you? And what do you think that's about?
It did strike me, but it didn't surprise me. And I would have said, well, the five or six players who boycotted, that should have been headlines, really, because that was a huge stand to take. I think the players taking a stand, not handshaking, I guess visually it was quite striking. And if you're kind of just coming into this without the context of the lead up of all the mobilization, that is what you see. And it is a strong statement. And I guess as well, the common retort from Israel, from any criticism, is to then lead with being called anti-Semitic. So I think that's, again, feeding into that narrative of we have to push back on being called that too. We also have to call out the genocide they're committing as well. But for the international headlines being called anti-Semitic and taking that stand, it definitely picked up traction. And I think it still sent a message.
A powerful one for sure. I'm getting from this that the experience of being called anti-Semitic angered or even radicalized some of the players who were less politically inclined. Like they were insulted by that and responded in kind. Is that a correct analysis?
Probably. I also think it's probably a lot to do with as well. It is a violation of the FIBA handbook as well. I mean, because you're talking about unsportsmanlike behavior, you're talking about possibly intimidation, you're talking about, so there was a number of incidents that, you know, go counter to the FIBA handbook that are grounds for sanctioning Israel on that. So that could be another thing. They might have a case there. They might have a case for the weapons on court and the political messaging, because FIBA themselves say they oppose violence, they promote peace, they're for human rights, you know, so within their own charters, we have to hold them to account. And that's kind of the overarching thing here. We're asking these governing international bodies, sporting bodies, to uphold their own charter, to follow their own rules, to promote the ethics and code of standards that they say they do.
You know, I was in Belfast some years ago, and there was this amazing political art I saw everywhere that was about solidarity with the Palestinian people. And Ireland has this long history of solidarity with Palestine. And I was hoping perhaps you could speak to the roots of that. What's that? What that's about, that there's this kinship between these people.
Yeah, Ireland has long-standing solidarity with Palestine. And it does go back to our own history. It does go back to our own context of occupation, colonialism, and oppression. And it does mirror similarly the situation, not on the same scale, but it does mirror. And those roots of solidarity are there. The longs that you see the murals everywhere. You see marching every week. People are on the streets of support, supporting Palestine. It's a solidarity that does go back. And it where you have to call out colonialism, you have to call out occupation, you have to call out oppression. And you also have to fight for freedom, liberation, justice. And I think Ireland it's an interesting one as well, because even though we're a small country on an international stage on this issue, we have been historically strong and we have been influential on it. And we're one of the few countries in Europe right now taking a strong stand. And while, you know, maybe public opinion might have said it took a little while to get here in the face of this oppression and in the face of these powers that be, Ireland is still being strong and showing that solidarity when it matters most. I think Israel also knows that, and that's why they lean on, you know, making us a pariah kind of in this whole landscape.
How did you come to this issue? Because, you know, you were a top flight athlete, and oftentimes doing that means you're wearing blinders because you have to focus on your sport. And yet you're clearly a political person as well. And I think it's important for other athletes to hear your experience about how these politics were able to break through and you were able to meld them with your athletic life.
Yeah, so my background as well is I'm a peace activist, author, and researcher. So it is no coincidence that I am politically engaged, because that is what I do for a living too. But I think as well, being a woman in sport, you are automatically coming up against structures that are just not built for you or in your interest. And being an athlete, and you talk about this a lot, like the athlete activist, like we're not asking, like it shouldn't be on athletes to do this or to advocate or to lead these movements, but you certainly have a voice and you certainly have a platform. And, you know, if you think about sports, you want a level playing field. You want all these ethics that go with sport. But if it's not being reproduced in your sport, you're going to have to advocate and do that, unfortunately. And I think as well, as I said, being a woman in sport, there are so many different discriminations that you have to speak out against, or else things won't get better, because we can't rely on these organizing bodies to do that. And we're seeing that very blatantly now. And so I came to speaking out about equality and better conditions, and it's like player welfare even at the heart of it. But Palestine as well, like I don't think we can be silent, especially what's happening now. We cannot bury our heads in the sand. We can't sit idly by. We have to speak up. And I think as well, people often say, well, I'm just one person, but no, like, yes, you're one person and look what you can do. You have to speak up, and it's drop by drop, and it's every action will count. And you might not see a boycott, you might not see it as being effective overall, but they very definitely add up. And there is strategic elements to all of these. And I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about boycotts overall, but
it goes to the next question, really, because I've been dying to ask you, because this is what I get in my world with other sports writers who say to me when I speak in praise of the actions of the players in Ireland, for example, they say, you are punishing Israeli athletes for the crimes of their state. Like when I say they shouldn't be in the Olympics, they say you are punishing Israeli athletes for Benjamin Netanyahu. What how do you respond to that?
It's a common refrain, but the point of boycotts is not to punish athletes. But if you're putting on that international jersey for your country, you're representing them. And we can't deny that sports is also a channel for soft power. And we, on the international stage, is hugely symbolic, you know, flags, anthems, national pride, competition. And what we've seen by Israel is a weaponization of that for propaganda. So when you say you're penalizing Israeli athletes, you're making a stand and a statement, and you're saying there's going to be isolation of Israel on all fronts, including cultural and sporting, because these aren't just taken on their own. It's part of collaborative efforts. I mean, the BDS campaign has been around for, 25 years? This is a concerted effort. And this is just one stand you're taking to say the behavior of your state is egregious, and it has to be called out, and you have to be sanctioned for it. And like the thing as well that gets me is there is precedent. So it has happened before. So these organizations are just being selective in who they are discriminating against and who they're punishing, who they're sanctioning, and who they're letting get away with it. So yeah, it's never been about penalizing athletes or organizing, or, you know, and like politics exists in sports, whether we like it or not. And the boycott movement, like we have to talk about as well, like what does success look like? If you're going to say, well, boycotting that athlete or that sport or that competition is not going to end genocide, well, then I think you've kind of missed a little bit of the point, that the point is to put pressure on these organizations, to put pressure on Israel, to make them the pariah state, and to spark the conversation, to get the international mobilization. And what we've seen now is, due to the Irish players taking a stand, there is that international conversation. More and more people are now looking to form coalitions. There's an international petition with over 70,000 signatures to remove Israel from sport, including the Olympics. There's PACBI, BDS, Red Card Israel, like so many organizations now coming together to apply this pressure. And when you take a stand, you send a very clear message, not only of solidarity to Palestinians, but to Israel, to say, you cannot get away with this. At what point are we going to stand up and say no?
Just so I don't leave my viewers behind, can you say what PACBI and Red Card Israel are?
Sorry, yeah. So the Palestinian Academic and Cultural Boycott is PACBI, and Red Card Israel is an initiative, an organization to remove Israel from international sport and say, you know, you should be sanctioned while you're on trial for genocide, essentially.
Is the historical example of South Africa and the way that they were international pariahs in sport for some many years before the fall of apartheid, has that been an effective tool, that history, in terms of making this argument?
Massively. Because people always say boycotts don't work. Well, sporting boycotts were instrumental and decisive in dismantling the apartheid South Africa regime. And we can't deny that. And I suppose as well, we would have a lot of, in Ireland as well, because rugby is huge, and a lot of rugby players actually boycotted. Some of them traveled and played, and then some of them boycotted, and then eventually there was an international boycott. So that is often referenced as a huge example of a success. But also, I mean, just more recently, all these organizations banning Russia and Belarus. I mean, it exists, and we cannot say sport and politics don't mix, because their use and their effectiveness refute that.
To wrap up, and thank you, you've been so generous with your time. Who are some of the athletes that you've drawn inspiration from, either in your life or in books, or like where does that platform for you come from? Like who on what shoulders do you stand upon?
That's a great question. As a basketball player, I mean, the WNBA as a whole is so strong in political statements. And I, you know, respect hugely every time they come out and say something strong. I suppose, you know, Colin Kaepernick with the taking the knee, LeBron James sometimes come out and like shut up and dribble. Lewis Hamilton's quite strong on political statements as well. We've seen a lot, actually, a lot of tennis players now come out, especially Palestine. But yeah, I think, I mean, I got to shout out Caitlin Clark now as well. I mean, for basketball, she's incredible what she's doing for the female game. But also the US women's soccer team with the equal pay, what they've done there is amazing. So yeah, I think finding creative ways as athletes to make a stand always gets my vote.
So what's next for the team, and what's next for Irish sport for Palestine?
Yes, yeah, so for the team, there's a return fixture in November. And if nothing changes between now and then, I'm going to reiterate my calls for boycott, because that will still count as the first forfeit, in which case there will still be a fine and not a ban. However, I'm hoping the landscape changes. I'm hoping we're going to apply, Irish Sport for Palestine, apply international pressure on these organizations to remove Israel. We have an open letter that many high profile athletes have signed already, and that's to sanction Israel, remove them for Olympics, that kind of thing. We're also forming coalitions, as I said, looking for different entry points with various matches, fixtures, sports as well, not just basketball. So yeah, that's we're ongoing. It's kind of given us more fuel that there is more international momentum now happening.
You know, we just interviewed someone with a new formation in the U.S. called Athletes for a Ceasefire. Perhaps I could make a connection there.
Please do.
And see if we could do some transatlantic organizing.
Amazing. Would love that.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Is there anything else you'd like to add to this story, to this narrative, what you'd like to see going forward before we tie a ribbon on this?
Any action will make a difference, whether you think it or not. It's not too late to act. It's not too late to speak up. Your words matter. Your actions matter. As I said, drop by drop, it all adds up and it all matters. And it, you know, it, I just don't think this is one of those things that is bigger than sport. We can't be silent here. And yeah, my solidarity goes to Palestine.
Rebecca O'Keefe, thank you so much for joining us here on Edge of Sports.
Thanks, Dave.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week. Thank you so much to Rebecca O'Keefe. Thank you to everybody out there listening. Thank you to The Nation Magazine. Hey, thank you to The Real News Network for producing the segment. For everybody out there, please, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.